nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Questions from last class?
No questions. Okay. Okay, in that case, I'm going to refresh you a little bit what we were doing.
Okay, we were looking at one particle and one particle only. Okay, and what we were doing is we know that we found that the interfacial kinetics given by the Butler-Bomer relationship relationship of that form, but we were assuming this was happening on the surface of one particle that was accumulating mass at a rate dc dt. Oops. Okay, and that particle had an area A. And based on that, we found that we could relate how much mass was being accumulated per unit second in that one isolated particle given what the area of that particle was. Okay, and then we solved that equation analytically. And as you see up there, what we found, or the main result, was that as the particle was getting closer and closer to being full, the rate of reaction was dropping to zero because there weren't enough reaction sites for the material to go into. Okay, and that's why for very long times, you can see the accumulated mass was basically going to zero. Okay, that is one particle though. Okay, and unfortunately, however, batteries actually look more like that. Okay, in fact, what we really care, not necessarily about how much stuff we're accumulating per unit mass, per unit volume, per unit time. We care much more about how much charge we are accumulating per unit time and per unit area. Why is that? Well, when we're looking at one entire electrode layer, as these electrodes are being rolled, their performance is measured in a per unit area basis, and how much charge is being put in depends on how much actually charge you're putting there in a per unit second, right? So, and the power will be given, really, what we care about is how much charge, if you may, per unit area we get out of the whole thing, okay? Ultimately, right? That gives you really how much current. And, of course, given how much voltage you have associated to that, you can consider the voltage times the current per unit area over the actual electrode, and that gives you a measure of the power of the cell. So qualitatively, what do you guys would do in order to maximize that? We already discussed this, some of it. Will we have more power with more porosity or with less porosity? We've discussed this, and I'm just trying to put you guys on the same page since we discussed this like a week or so ago. We spent an entire week discussing porosities and tortuosities, and so this is the kind of stuff that now you have on the top of your head. Say that again. Right. And well, we can make a list, right? So we know, and I'm going to put it here, that should go up when porosity increases. Okay. And whatever the reaction rate we have for one particle somehow should fold in so that we have a higher amount of charge per unit area. What else controls it? Given fixed porosity, do we expect to have more power with thicker or thinner electrode? More current density? Thinner electrode. Why thinner? Right. Again, yeah, that's a good point. If you want to include losses in the problem, the thicker the electrode, the more the losses, right? So right now, let's just ignore losses for a second. Just how much charge, if you think about each of these individual particles, each particle is contributing with an area and it's reacting in, right? Or reacting out, right? Depending on what electrode you're looking at, right? Let's just say I ignore for a second how much the losses, all the scattering of the ions or the electrons as they go through the electrolyte, right? I want to ignore for a second the tortuosity part of the problem, right? Just think of only of the reactive part of the problem, okay? So you want to try again? Do you want a thicker or a thicker electrode? Thicker or a thinner electrode? Right, of course, right? You want a thicker electrode because given how much charge we can extract per unit second per particle, the more particles I have, the more charge per unit second I get, right? So the Q dot increases when a electrode is thicker. What about particle size? What can we say about particle size? Will we get more current density when the particles are smaller or when they're bigger? Yes, why? Why is it when they're smaller? Right, the specific surface area should increase when the particle size are smaller, given fixed porosity and fixed electrode thickness. Why? Because I'm basically putting more area per unit volume. So this should increase It should all be proportional to the Butler-Bromer relationship, though. I hope you agree with that. Right? The more reactive the interface of each particle, if I compound all the particles, all together should give me higher current. Okay, you agree with that? Okay, then... in interfacial reactivity. Okay. So what I want to do is try to figure out a way to translate what we already have with this intuition that we have developed. Okay? That's really the... it shouldn't be that hard, considering that we know, the one thing we know is that as electrons are being exuded from the surface of the particles, okay, they will enter the electrolyte carbon phase mixture and they will be collected at the back. Okay, so technically, okay, given an electrode of volume V, each particle is contributing with its own individual area, okay, and they will be collected, say, at that top layer, okay? So, and I'm going to put it there. The amount of charge per unit area that an electrode will have times the area of the electrode, I'm going to put A sub E for area of the electrode, okay, that's the top area, right? That's the one that we could measure, that we pull out a ruler and measure X and Y, okay? That corresponds to that top area over there, okay? That should be, and I hope you agree with me, right here I'm talking about how many coulombs per unit area per second I'm getting, times area gives me coulombs per second, should be equivalent to how much charge I get per unit area times the area of all the particles. Does that make sense? Right? Because it is every single particle is contributing with its own, and every single particle has its own Butler-Bromer relationship. So if that is the case, then this should be true too. Okay? You agree with that? I mean, what we're saying is that whatever current we're extracting from the battery is the contribution from all the particles. Okay? And they're coming from every particle is just contributing. And of course, there is a loss. Okay? There's a loss proportional to the tortuosity of the system, as you were saying. And the thicker the electrode, the bigger that loss, right? And somehow we have to compensate for that at some point in order to have a much realistic measure, right? But here, the way we have it, we need to account for that. Okay? So, well, here the aside story is that we can go ahead and, in principle, take all the particles that we have. Right? And basically sum over all the particles, and that should give us the area, right? That will be so hard to do, especially if you're in a processing operation, right? You cannot just start counting particles and counting each size. I guess you could do that with a model. That would be probably the model way to do it. But when you're trying to come up with simple rules to do that, you really are trying to get something, some quantities that are macroscopic to the system, okay? So what I'm going to propose to you is the classic trick on multiply an equation by one, okay? Which I find to be one of the best tricks in the bag of tricks. So I'm just going to divide and multiply by the volume of the entire electrode. Okay? Didn't do anything, just multiplied by one. Okay? Do you agree with me? I mean, it's such a simple trick. Okay? And if I do that, I can do this. A particles divided by V and multiply by the volume of the electrode. Okay? You guys remember this number? What is that number? You remember that number? We talked about this for a little bit a week ago. Yeah. What? Right, that's the reactivity, right? That's how much reactive area per unit volume we have, right? Here, thanks for playing, though. I appreciate you. I could tell that you were really trying. So that all those particles that are basically overlapping against each other, we would have to subtract, right? Just like you were discussing the other day, right? Corners and edges would probably be completely different special cases, right? Roughness of the particles would have to be accounted for. Particle polar dispersity would have to account for. But we basically said, we derived it, right, and said that that was equal to 3 over Rp, let's just say for the cathode, okay, times 1 minus the porosity of the system, right? I hope you guys remember that relationship. If not, it's one of those things that, at least for batteries, you should basically memorize. Yes?
So, any particles, is that, shouldn't it be surface area?
Yeah. The entire, all the surface area contributions from all the particles in that box over there. Yeah, wasn't that a square? I'm sorry. Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sorry, thank you, you're right. But I don't want to go that way for two reasons. One, because I'm going to forget the four. And the other one, because this one is much more practical. Okay? Okay, but you see that, right? So I can use that. Now my problem is that I really never know the volume of the batteries, right? What I do know is how much I know the thickness of the battery and how much of that roll I'm putting in a can. Okay, so I'm gonna use the same trick again, right? Except that now I know, I'm gonna put it, let me put it in this other corner. Okay, the volume of my battery is going to be the thickness of the electrode, okay, times the area, in this case, the area of the electrode, right, because that's the volume of my box. So I can just put it back in there, and I get then, Okay, and then I can get rid of these two guys. And I find that for the battery, the actual reactivity of the system has this form. Or if you prefer, oops. Okay, hope you can see it there from the back. Basically, what we're saying is the smaller the particle, the greater the amount of charge my electrode can deliver. Okay, the more porous the system, is it a minus? Yes, it is. Actually, am I getting this backwards? It doesn't work for this one. Why is that? Why is it not working for this one? Why is it that the more porous my system is, the less the charge I get? So it seems to contradict our intuition. But I think it's because we're missing something in that other bit. It really isn't. There's something there that I am, that we forgot to add there. How much reactivity, let me just elaborate about that for a second. How reactive the particle, electrode is going to be if I don't have any particles? Right? There will be no particles, no area, no charge. Right, so it does make sense, right, that if epsilon is equal to 1, this should shut down. Okay? But we also know that the more porous the system is, I should get more power. So what's the problem there? And you had a comment there. I thought you had a comment.
There should be a porosity term in the volume.
Say that again?
There should be a porosity term in the volume.
Ah, yes, that's a good point. The question is whether or not there should be a porosity term here. I say no, because here I'm trying to relate the charge coming from the box from the charge coming from the particles. And by multiplying by V, I actually have to be consistent, you're right, with the volume that I multiply and divide. And here I pick to multiply the volume of the battery, not the volume of the particles. If I were to do what you say, then yes, there would be a problem there. But in this case, I have to admit, I was, when I make this choice, I already knew this relationship. Okay? And I was trying to get rid of this, of the area of the electrode, because that's a number that is always has to drop out. So I purposely picked it that way. But if I pick it the other way, then I would have to input into my equation the area of the electrode, which you really never know. Okay, but you do know the thickness of the electrode and the particle size. Okay? So yeah, it is the actual volume of the actual electrode, not the volume of the particles. Okay? So what am I missing then? Because, I mean, we just went through that little aside. But why is it that the charge rate doesn't increase when the porosity increases in this case? In fact, according to this thing, the charge rate decreases when the porosity increases. So what's missing? Well, to me, more important than the relationship is what we actually know, either quantitatively or qualitative about it. So, What's the problem here? What am I missing? We're not going to the optimum porosity. What does that mean? Yes, you're right. We're missing a tortuosity contribution. In fact, I'm just going to sketch that qualitatively. I'm going to leave here my little table because I want my relationship there to stand. Okay, or at least that we know when it breaks and why it's not including all the stuff we need. I'm going to plot here voltage times not even Q dot. I'm going to put the actual macroscopic extracted current, which if there weren't any losses, would be the same thing. But we have losses here. Okay, so they're not exactly the same thing. So if I plot this as a function of porosity, okay, we both know that when the system is non-porous, the power density would be effectively zero. Okay, then I make it more porous, and the energy density, the power density goes up. Okay, why? Because there are spaces for the ions to go through. And then it comes down again until it goes to zero when epsilon equals one. Okay? You agree with that, right? When epsilon equals one, my power should go completely to zero because I don't have any active material anymore. And here, my power is non-zero, but it's really tiny because there are no spaces for the material to go through. So there's somewhere here, yes, there is an optimal porosity here that'll give us the highest performance. So, what is it that I'm missing here? Here, as the porosity goes up, my power goes up, delivering me here with an optimal power. Okay, and then it comes down. What is the problem there? What am I missing? How is this relationship over here colliding with that statement, with what our intuition tells us over there? Is this relationship okay? Is this statement okay? Or is this one okay? Are they both wrong? Right, you're right. This relationship is not accounting for losses. Okay, so you're right. Here, when we said this, that the charge rate should increase when the porosity increases, we're really thinking about losses. We should really say, when the porosity increases, really, also how much charge is actually being expelled into the electrolyte should really decrease given a fixed particle size and fixed thickness because I have less area per unit volume, which is really what we were saying here. So this relationship is correct in the absence of losses, okay? But if you want to include losses, which are really another big component of this, then this relationship is completely missing that point, okay? But on the other hand, it is including the fact that when I make it thicker, I get more charge per unit area. When I make it particle smaller, the current density actually increases, at least the charge per unit second increases, and the more reactive every particle is, the better my battery. Okay, so in that sense, we capture those physics, but we miss this bit. Okay? Okay, any other questions, any comments here? Okay. Yes? The what? Ah, you're right. Rephrase your question. You're saying the radius is fine, but if my particle size distribution is not monodisperse, okay, then this relationship will change. Yes, you're right. So as we were discussing more than a week ago, the broader the polar dispersity, the smaller this could drop up to a factor of 3. So yes, that's a problem as well. Yes, in this case, the assumption here by me substituting A to B, and here, I am indeed assuming that A is 3 over RP 1 minus epsilon. That's a big assumption there, right? But in general, there are, you know, the geometry of the particles, the polar dispersity, all impact to affect that, right? And given, of course, a specific reaction rate. So, yeah, absolutely. You would have to redo that. If you don't have spherical particles, it's not the same if you have cubes or tetrahedrons or platelets. It'll completely change. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Okay. Yes. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. So if I change the roughness of the particles, each particle is giving me more effective area. So then I would have to either recast my a reactivity of my particle, my A value, and include here maybe some shape contribution that is greater or equal to 1 to account for that roughness, that particle roughness. Absolutely. You would have to include that. Okay, so, yeah, you could do a lot of science just simply from getting that relationship for the right particle powder system, right? Absolutely. Will completely change this relationship again. And, yeah, maybe something I should have said is that I'm assuming a low polar dispersity, perfectly spherical particles, just like it has been classically done, so that we can make our mental push-ups on this. Okay? Yeah, but if you wanted to do something much more sophisticated, that'll change, absolutely. Okay, any other comments or questions? Okay? Okay, to rehash this last point, we have a cross-sectional area, an electrode thickness, a characteristic, let's call it characteristic particle size, and based on that, we can extract how much charge per unit area, and by going through that derivation, very simple, straightforward derivation, then we can indeed get how much charge in the electrode layer we would get per unit second. Okay? And that relationship really gives us for a reaction-limited electrode, which is really the situation that we're at, we're basically including only the porosity effects, we're neglecting all the ohmic losses associated with that, which are also porosity related, but how much instantaneous power you would get, the maximum, the peak current would be given through this relationship, okay? And that if you throw in the entire Butler-Bomer relationship, you will have this much more complicated relationship, okay? I want you to notice that this actually is catching what we already have. We know that, we know now that how much charge you will be getting per unit second for the entire electrode is not going to be fixed. Because remember, way back the first week of classes, we were saying that the total charge was a fixed number per the electrode. That will be the limit of, for this relationship, where the amount of stuff that you're putting into your electrode is occurring so slow that you can ignore the reactivity of the system. Okay? But only for that case. Okay? Does that make sense? If you want to account for the rate at which stuff is being put into the particle, the time dependence, this relationship would be more accurate. But you still need to figure out what to do with the concentration, because in that relationship that you have up there, the concentration is time dependent. Okay? And here we're assuming that the Butler-Bomer relationship is indeed time-dependent, but we're now ignoring the spatial dependency of that relationship because every interface may have a different rate of reaction, okay? Because they're interacting with the other particles, right? That will happen too, okay? So, and this is just the assumptions, okay? It's just this one will be just the instantaneous current of the system. Now it's going to be charge dependent because if you remember, the concentration for the particle, okay, is going to, in this case, is going to determine how fast the material will be put into the particle, okay? Like we had before, you guys remember how when we derived the capacity ratio, okay? We were saying that the thicker the electrode, the more charge you get, so that's still true. Okay, that still works, except that now we are introducing the area effect of the particles. Okay, so now the smaller the particle size, the greater the instantaneous current. So that changes things to some degree. Okay, and well, let's see if I have something else. And to rehash it one time in case you missed it, this description that you have up there does not account for a low porosity for the ohmic losses induced from the porosity. Okay? That's still something we have to add to this or subtract to it in order to get the right relationship. Okay? Okay. I'm gonna try to make a little cartoon here. So I have my cathode. That has, for my cathode, I know now that this is dependent on the Butler-Bomer of the cathode over 3 over RP 1 minus epsilon HC, okay? C for cathode, and here I have my anode. Where the charge rate for the anode, okay, has to have the same relationship. Why wouldn't it? Same relationship. Different numbers, though. Okay, here I still have particles. Gonna make them bigger just for the sake of making the point that they're different. Okay? So I turn on my battery. Okay? And this electrode is gonna be trying to take in charge per second at a rate QC dot. I turn it on. The anode, when I turn on my battery, is gonna try to expel charge at that rate given for that relationship. What will happen if QA is not equal to QC? Say that again. Yeah, that charge should accumulate somewhere. The electrons will come out, okay? But there's going to be an imbalance, right? And that's the point I wanted to make. Okay? We want the system to be balanced. You guys remember when we derived the capacity ratio? We were saying that ideally, and I'm gonna put it here. The capacity ratio okay. Remember what we were saying here? We wanted ideally this number as close as possible to 1, okay? Because if it's not equal to 1, then the charge from the anode, if I expel more charge than the one the cathode can take, there will be a charge that I will not be able to use. You guys remember that? Now think about it. Now time dependent, right? I turn on my battery. These particles are going to be expelling lithium ions into the electrolyte. Okay, and they're doing it at a rate that is different from what the cathode is doing. Let's just say the cathode is doing much slower, right? It's taking ions, but at a much lower rate. Either because the areas, the particles are much bigger, okay, or I put less, it's more porous, I'm sorry, or because the reactivity of the particles in the anode is so high that it really, it's just giving as much as it can, right? It's equivalent of, I don't know, these are how many pizzas I'm getting, and this is how many pizzas I'm taking in, right? At some point, I have the table covered with pizzas, and, you know, then I have to take it home, right? So you see the point, right? There will be here in the electrolyte an amount that I will not use. That accumulation in the electrolyte can lead to irreversible failure, okay? If you put too much lithium in the electrolyte, you can induce an irreversible phase transformation. You can crystallize your electrolyte. You can force something else to happen that could make the entire battery, can render it completely useless. So just like we have our capacity ratio for the equilibrium system, I want to define now another capacity ratio. But the ratio between Oops. There. The current density that is coming through one electrode and the one from the counter electrode. Okay? And just like before, where I want this number to be as close as possible to 1, I want this number in an ideal system to be as close as possible to 1. And the question is whether or not this is possible. Can I make that equal to 1 or not? And of course, we have everything there to make that happen. Okay, we have a relationship for the Butler-Bomer relationship, the electrode's thickness, the porosity, the particle size. So I should be able to just plug it all in and figure it out. Okay? It's a mess. You can see it's a relationship that pretty much uses the whole slide. Okay? And my assumption, the one assumption I'm going to make, is that the concentration in the electrolyte, okay, is going to be the same here, and the same here, and the same here in the back, and the same here on the other side, which is not necessarily true. Okay? Even lithium takes some time to get there, right? There's some transport limitations. If I make it really thick, I can completely deplete the back or completely saturate the back because I don't give enough time for the material to go through. Okay? But I'm going to make that assumption. Otherwise, I'm going to have to add a whole other equation, which is the equation for transport on the electrolyte. Okay? So I'm just going to make that assumption for now. Okay? And we'll revisit it and refresh it again, flesh it more in more detail, maybe in a couple of weeks. Okay? So I'm going to try to take that relationship and plug those equations in here. Oh, yeah, there's enough time. Have my new capacity ratio, and I'm just going to directly substitute it. I hope you agree with me that if I divide that if I have the same relationship for the cathode and the anode, the threes will go away. Okay? And also the Faraday's constant and the valence is also going to go away because they're the same in both electrodes. Okay? The only thing I end up with is the properties of the interface and the properties of the electrode layers and the particle sizes. Even the overpotential goes away. I'm assuming that when I have an overpotential, it's shared between the electrodes. Okay, that overpotential is what's driving the system. So I'm going to throw that away as well. Okay? So if I do that, then I will get alpha C, alpha A. Oh, this should be, yes, this is fine. Okay, and okay, my ratio of both relationships. Okay, something I should say, I want to use here the assumption that I made, which is the concentration is going to be the same in both anode and cathode. So this one goes away with that one because they're numerically the same. Although in practice there could be imbalances on what I have in each layer. Okay, and well, I can actually regroup terms. Hope I didn't miss anything. Okay, and I end up. Oh, and I'm going to make another assumption. Okay, my other assumption now is that you guys remember that the best battery is the one where the the rate at which I discharge is the same as the rate at which I recharge. And that only occurs when alpha C equals alpha A equals 1/2. So I'm going to make that assumption. Okay? And, well, I'm almost done. Because now I can say here, I'm going to call this whole number. This is just a number that, I forgot a whole relationship there that no one told me anything. 1 minus epsilon t of the cathode. And here I should have 1 minus epsilon t of the anode. So I have to clean this one up. I'm sorry. Just that so many terms. Now I can write this other term. Okay? This whole number that captures all the porosity, particle size, and electrode thickness, and even the reaction rate, it's all captured here. This is all the geometry of the system, okay, and the kinetics. If there's any thermodynamics, it's in the solubility limit here. And this is solubility limit of the cathode. And this is solubility limit of the anode. Okay? And something we learned is that when a battery is being discharged, it starts from this number basically being completely full to basically being completely depleted, and then, I'm sorry, the cathode is empty, so, I'm sorry, this number is empty, so this number is close to CT, and this number goes the other way. This is completely full, okay? So this number is very small, and then just starts increasing, okay? You see that? So it's the ratio of both. So in principle, and I'm going to put it here, the concentration of the cathode is a function of the state of charge, okay? And that's increasing, okay? You agree with that? And the concentration in the anode is also a function of the state of charge, but that one is decreasing, okay? You agree with that? So, since I don't have really the relationships right now on how they work, I'm going to assume that this one goes as the linear with respect to the state of charge, okay? So that when x equals 1, I reach the solubility limit, and when x equals 0, the battery is completely discharged, okay? So it goes from 0 to 1 is what I'm saying here. And this number over here, okay, has to go the other way. You agree with that? When the state of charge shifts from one value to the other one, one is increasing and the other one's decreasing. So there's a competition between them. Okay? So, since this has to go the other way, okay? That's what I'm assuming. Is this a reasonable assumption? Why am I multiplying both of them or expanding it in terms of the solubility limit of the cathode, especially the one on the anode? Well, the assumption here is that how much stuff I can put in the anode will depend on the solubility limit of the cathode. You guys remember, right, they will never really have the same solubility limit, right? One will be able to accommodate more than the other one. So if I do that, and I'm going to skip the derivation of that, but you can reorganize this whole relationship, okay? And you will end up with a very simple relationship just based on the state of charge. Okay? So, well, this is just how we transition from the equilibrium capacity ratio to something much more time dependent. Okay? Which is this much more complicated form. And if we put that in our system, and assuming that the solubility limit of the anode is much larger than the one on the cathode, which is true, right? If you guys remember, right, the We usually use graphite that basically can accommodate at least twice as much as the cathode, or we can use pure lithium that can accommodate up to 10 times more than the cathode. Okay, if we do that, then, which is the relationship that I was proposing, and we end up with that relationship, with these two as the numbers that I propose. Okay? What are we learning from this relationship? That the capacity ratio, how much stuff is actually being accumulated in the electrolyte, is very much state of charge. Okay? That if it's not the same, if your battery is fully charged, okay, you will get basically R0C over 1 over Y to the 1/2, okay, that if X equals 1, then the capacity ratio is 0. So this number is changing from one extreme to the other one, okay, of the discharge process. In one case, you can accumulate a lot of stuff into the electrolyte. And in another case, in the other extreme, you can actually completely deplete the electrolyte if you're not careful. In both cases, those are bad states to be in your battery, because that will lead to failure. That could lead to some reversible reactions. And that's what I plot here. Okay, here, I plot, let me go back one slide to make the point. I'm sorry. Here, if you look at that relationship, I'm basically multiplying by R0 here is what I'm trying to say, okay? That R0 value there, I am just not including it, but you can see this whole thing shifting up and down, okay? The black curve corresponds for the case of Y equals 1, which corresponds for the case where the solubility limit of the anode is twice as much of the cathode, okay? Which is roughly what happens in typical systems. So you can see that there is hope in the sense that at least when the battery starts, okay, the capacity ratio could potentially start to be 1, okay? But as it continues, it deviates from 1 and becomes less than 1, okay? So we could actually deplete the entire electrode, okay? And you remember how we were saying that ideally would be great if the cathode and the anode were the same solubility limits? When it comes to the kinetics, you can see it's actually very bad, okay? Y equals 0 when the solubility limit of the anode and the cathode are the same. Basically that ratio skyrockets, especially at the beginning. It's so reactive that the number just goes all the way to the roof and then comes back down and goes to 0 again when the battery is fully discharged, okay? So I guess the moral to the story is we wanted initially to have a lot of reactivity, but with a lot of reactivity comes the imbalances when we put both electrodes together. So we still have to account for the entire system if we want to improve on it, so that we don't have this other extra things that may completely kill the cell. And that's what I'm hoping to talk about in the next class, where we talk about all these irreversible phase transformations that developed surprisingly also at the interface. Okay? And we'll discuss that next time. Any questions? Any other questions? Yes?
Mm-hmm. Because that is sort of radially symmetric.
Right.
The particle is not symmetric.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you remember how we came up with the Butler-Raman relationship, that we really never came in, put a shape there in any, no pun intended, in any shape or form, we put any shape on it, on the derivation, okay? All we did was say that we have a reactant and a product, and we try to account for the forward and backward reaction rates. So in that sense, there's not any size. The size plays a role in the sense that when you account for the shape of the particle, some regions of the particles may be more active than others for multiple reasons, right? You could have corner effects associated with the shape of the particles. You could have particle-particle interactions. Okay, and the transport limitations also impact on that. In that sense, the effective reaction rate could completely change as a result of that. But the interfacial reaction is shape independent. It is when you put everything together that the shapes actually start mattering and matter a lot. Okay? Okay. Any other, did that answer your question? Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Then we'll talk about those reactions next time. Thank you.